o'clock hour here on your home of the Cowboys and Rangers. Thanks for being a total. That stands for Turn It On, Leave It On. Sean Sharif, RJ Choppy, and Bobby Bell back together again. Peyton, you were supposed to play a final call of the Stanley Cup being won by Florida to make us feel better about ourselves for our current guest, the color analyst, who's shaking his head on the fan cam, Twitch, and Zoom. He was so great last time, we had to bring him back. Bob Stauffer joining us here on 105.3 The Fan. Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Good. You have to suck the life out of me, eh? On free agency day, I got about a six-hour shift coming up on the air. So, coaching's an important thing. And it's ironic you got a guy from Edmonton on, because one of the greatest coaches in the history of your state, Darrell K. Royal, before he even went to Mississippi State or Washington, coached the Edmonton Eskimos in 1953. So there's your useless, superfluous information before he ended up becoming the legend that he was. Like, the stadium's named after him in Austin, isn't it? So there you go.
Bob, how is Edmonton dealing with this cup loss versus the last one?
Well, I'm going to tell you right now that you had me on before the morning of game number four of the series, and there was an incident in that game that changed the complexion of what happened with Edmonton, and that's Mason Marchment ran into Zach Hyman and broke, dislocated Zach's wrist. There was some other damage in the hand, and it knocked him out of the playoffs the rest of the way, and Edmonton was never the same team after. And people say, come on, Bob, you got McDavid, you got Drysdale. Well, of the active players in the National Hockey League, Zach Hyman has the most goals in a single playoffs. He had 16 a year ago.
Wow.
And against Florida, with how they play that, you know, that high-pressure physical game, Hyman being out of the Oilers lineup, for Edmonton to have, there's no question Florida was the better team in the finals in six games. But Edmonton needed Hyman, and that was a huge loss. The series was not as close as it was the year before. Florida deserved to win. And I think because Florida deserved to win, it's less emotional for Oilers fans. Like, it was a real hard loss a year ago.
Yeah.
Edmonton, almost pulled off something that hadn't happened since the 1940s. And so I think the fans here were pragmatic about it. They're like, you know, the Oilers have won 9 playoff series in the last 4 years. There's organizations in the league that have been around for 50 plus years that have never done that. So, but that's not why you have me on. You have me on because partially what happened with Dallas. And I remember being in Dallas for game 5, the morning of, and Peter DeBoer made a comment about the players can't, or the coaches can't put the puck in the nets for the players. And I talked to some people in our organization that day. And I said, if the Oilers win tonight in 5, I wonder if Dallas is going to have to make a coaching change. And ultimately they did. So I think that's why you got me on today.
So you thought that was one of the comments. We were focusing obviously on the Ottinger stuff, but when he said, we're not that type of team to respond after what happened at the AAC.
Yeah. Basically not wanting to hit in the playoffs. That's, Florida runs over people.
You know, he's a good coach. But for 2 years in a row against the Oilers, so here's the theory on it, okay? You guys are the voice of the Cowboys. We talked about this last time. In Edmonton, the Oilers have all the oxygen, okay? But even around Canada, because they've got McDavid and Drysdale, they get a lot of noise. Some might say they get too much attention. Well, in Dallas, there's the Cowboys and everybody else. And the Stars start to get coverage as you go through rounds 2 and 3. And Dallas is one of the best organizations in the NHL, best run organizations in the league. I just sensed at times, I was a little surprised with Pete, given the amount of experience that he had, he seemed a little irritable, and maybe it was because he could see that the series was sliding a bit. You know, they blew the 2-1 lead against Edmonton up 2-0 in game 4 in Edmonton in 2024. And then after game 1 in Dallas, I think there were a lot of people that thought the Stars were going to wallop the Oilers, and the Oilers came back and wrestled the series from them. So I did think, I talked with key people in our organization and wondered, I wonder if they make a coaching change. And if they do, I guarantee you they're going to talk to Glenn Gullison.
Bob Stauffer, Edmonton analyst, joining us here at 105 through the Fan. All right, so you bring up Gully, 7-year assistant with Edmonton. He was here as a coach with the Stars. It wasn't a very good team. He probably wasn't given a fair shake here. But what are they getting?
Well, RJ, for the last 7 years, Edmonton's had the best power play in the league at 26.8%. Now, this year there was a bit of a drop off, but that coincided with Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl not playing. One of them was out of every one of the final 14 games of the regular season. So that knocked their power play down. They were like six and it dropped it to 13th. But it has been a record-setting power play. And so he has been a part of that. And I think that, you know, Glenn has gone through Todd McClellan, Ken Hitchcock, Dave Tippett. You guys know a couple of these guys. Jay Woodcroft and now Chris Knobloch. So five different coaches. He has been a great teammate, right? Like, he's a head coach in his own right. He's been a two-time NHL head coach. He was, you know, at no point did he ever sit there and you know, have any attitude towards Chris, who was a rookie NHL head coach. He helped him, and he will, you know, he will be missed on the Oilers staff, and he's a great guy to deal with. I mean, I'm going to date myself, but I was already doing university hockey play-by-play before Glenn played for the University of Saskatchewan.
Wow.
So I've known, you know, known about him for a long time and watched his career trajectory with interest. And you're 100% right. Dallas was at a simply different place now than they were sort of 12 to, if I'm not mistaken, there was significant ownership issues back in about 12, 13 with the Stars. So
they just changed it. Yeah.
Like you, the club you guys are talking about in Dallas, this is a team that a lot of players want to go play for. Like, Dallas is a hot, like, Edmonton's a hot market when it has McDavid and Draisaitl, right? And then they got to do a real good job drafting and developing players because Edmonton ain't Dallas. And so Dallas has got some advantages that some other organizations, just like Florida has, state tax issues and things like that. Lots of guys talk very fondly of, you know, the Dallas experience. And my experience in terms with Gullitson over the last 7 years has been, you know, excellent. I mean, he's just a really good guy to deal with. He's done a great job on special teams, and he was a great team player as a coach because he supported the coaches that he worked with, whether they were really experienced or relatively inexperienced at the NHL. You know, Jay Woodcroft and Chris Knobloch had never been head coaches in the NHL. Todd McClellan, Ken Hitchcock, and Dave Tippett, those guys got 40 years of NHL head coaching experience between the three of them. So it shows you how he can coexist with others. So, you know, look, it's the worst kept secret. Have they made it official yet, the Stars, that he's the coach? Or is it just, yeah, well, it's the worst kept secret going. We know it's going to happen. And you're getting a guy that has already had, you know, has learned from his past mistakes, the ones that he's made. But I also don't think, by the way, I don't think this is the first time Dallas has tried to hire him. I think they tried to hire him a few years ago, maybe not as the head coach of the NHL team, but maybe to come back into the organization and maybe greater clarity can Jim Neal can bring some greater clarity to that when the announcement in the press conference takes place.
Bob, you know, we were just talking about how, you know, maybe some of the prickly nature to Pete DeBoer got him in trouble here. And you know, some of his handling of just comments about whether it be, you know, their play style or the way he handled the Otter situation and then talked about it afterwards. In terms of those sort of things, the a little abrasive nature and some of those issues with the media, are those kind of things not going to be an issue you're confident with Glenn Gullitson? Or is he somebody who also maybe has a little bit of an edge to him and can handle players that way?
Well, it's funny, right? Like, and maybe it's because I spent 8 years as an SID at a Canadian university. I got a message to anybody that's coaching right now. If you think breaking players down and building them up is the way to coach, you should get out of coaching.
Yeah.
It's just, you wouldn't let anybody do that to your kids. You'd have a little, you take them for a little walk and have a little conversation if you saw somebody trying to break your kids down and build them up. No, that's not how you get the most out of people. And I'm not saying that's what DeBoer did. I'm just saying that today's athlete's different. The key to success, in my opinion, to dealing with today's athlete is to treat them with respect and dignity from the beginning of a relationship. And when you do that, you engender passion from them, and then they don't want to fail you because you've treated them the right way right from the beginning. And I have 100% complete confidence that Glenn Gullitson would go into Dallas and do that because, frankly, I mean, he's got about as close a relationship as a coach can have with two of the best players in the world, Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, you know, so, you know, and he spent 7 years with them through five head coaches. So he to me is today's coach in terms. Some might say, well, maybe you got to be a little bit tougher at times, but on a day to day basis, I think you got to make sure that you have a real positive relationship with people to get the most out of them.
Bob, Stars fans who are not in love with this hire are saying there's no way you can argue that Glenn Gullitzen is an upgrade or equal to Pete DeBoer on paper. Would you agree with that?
I would say that Pete's had a lot of success in the league. It's hard to saying that if the color guy from Edmonton is recognizing, geez, I wonder if they're going to make a change in the morning of game five based on some comments. They're going to have to. Like, I don't think that Jim Nill want, like, veteran managers don't like firing coaches, okay? And I will also tell you that there's some challenges economically in some markets out there where you don't want to just, you know, have to pay a guy out for a year. So I can understand people. Look, Pete DeBoer is a good coach. He is. But it might have, and I'm not super close to it in Dallas. Daryl Ray might be a better guy to ask on a day-to-day basis. But sometimes it's just time. And conversely, in Gullitzen's case, sometimes you just have to give people an opportunity. I bet you he's a hell of a lot better coach now than he was when he was in Dallas before. And he's been a part of a team that, again, has done a lot of winning over the last 4 years, just hasn't won the ultimate prize. Unfortunately for Edmonton, they've lost in the last four playoff years to the team that won the Stanley Cup, which is that's a hard pill, mm-hmm. bitter pill for people to swallow. But he certainly has been a contributor to what's been a pretty good run here in oil country.
Oilers analyst Bob Stauffer joining us here on 105 Through the Fan with Glenn Gullitzen being brought in with the Stars or appearing to be brought in. Bob, you know, a lot of the talk heading into the postseason for Dallas was that they were a finesse team. They were kind of a team that needed things to be open. They weren't very physical. How do you look at the Stars under Gullitzen in terms of what the identity will be, how the roster construction might look? What do you look at from that angle?
Oh, Sean, I think that's interesting, right? Like, I think the game's changed. Like, I grew up playing against a guy named Todd Ewen, and he's no longer alive. He's the only guy ever to knock Bob Probert out in a fight in the NHL. And everybody could, like, literally in junior hockey, which I was not good enough to play when there was only 12 teams in the WHL, every kid on those teams would fight. Now, today in hockey, one kid on a junior team. It's just a complete – now, Florida had a very aggressive, assertive team, and some people thought that they had their way with Edmonton. I think there were some issues that worked to their advantage in great game three when we had a little bit of a dust-up. It's still – intimidation's always going to be a part of hockey. There's always going to be a physical nature. You do have a couple players – you know, Bichelle's going to be a force in the league to come in the back end. I think you're going to have to find a way to get at a degree of physicality to your forward groups. Like, it can't just be, you know, Jamie Benn in his mid-30s.
Yeah.
Mid to late 30s now, you know, 36, 37. He's got to have some more. But that's not on the coach. Mm-hmm. That's going to be on, you know, Jim Nill and the team there in Dallas to add.
Bob, before we let you go, is Ed the latest on Edmonton and the McDavid deal? Do you expect anything to happen there? And is Vegas now with the Marner deal maybe the top contender to Edmonton to get him out of the West?
I'd say Dallas is the top competitor to Edmonton. I mean, Vegas is the top competitor in the Pacific Division. I still can't believe Dallas beat Colorado. Like, Dallas didn't have Heiskanen and they didn't have Robertson in that series. I'm stunned the Stars won that series because I thought stylistically Colorado was going to be a tougher matchup. There's lots of good teams in the West. Fair comment about Marner. We'll see. I mean, they're not going to have Petrangelo. I'm going to be interested to see who they add on defense because he's going to be a substantial loss. The Oilers will make probably a couple subtle additions, but they have to get Evan Bouchard re-signed, and I got him done yesterday. That's a piece. He's led defense scoring three straight years in a row in the playoffs, so he was a critical part of their team. McDavid, you know, look for something over the course of the summer. They didn't get Leon Draisaitl extended last year until September 3rd. I think there'd be a little bit more of an impetus to try to get something done a little bit earlier. And but there's lots of good teams in the West. So there's lots of teams that are going to challenge for the conference next year to go out on the Stanley Cup.
Bob, awesome having you on again. Thank you so much, and have fun over the next 6 hours with your free agency show.
Anytime you need a guy to talk about the connection between Daryl K. Royal and Edmonton, let me know.
The great Bob Stauffer, Edmonton Oilers color analyst here on 105.3 The Fan as we wait for the Dallas Stars to make it official here on Sean and RJ. Be careful getting your coffee in Irving. And do you hate opening gifts in front of others? Peyton Russell has your solutions. It's PP in the morning.
Hey.
Next.
Well, congrats to Peyton Manna. He has found himself on the most toxic show on The Fan, and there's no number two.
He put together the single worst 30 minutes in live radio history.
That is right, 8:20 on a Tuesday morning. Time for a little pee-pee in the morning, baby. That's right. And guys, it is July 1st. Happy Bobby Bonilla Day.
That's right.
Oh,
the former New York Mets.
5.3 million.
Yes, gets his 15th installment of $1.193 million today. The Mets have so far paid him nearly $18 million. There are 10 years and over $10 million left. What a better contract than that. There's not one out there.
No.
There's not one out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot better out there probably.
I mean, it's a good deal, though, for him, especially with, you know, the way inflation gets out of control, you know? So there's all that.
But. Shohei's deal is probably going to wind up being better than that one.
Guys, we go local here. I know Neighborhood Watch is usually Thursday morning, but we go local here on Tuesday morning, and Starbucks in Texas. And Starbucks, they might just need to stop writing words or phrases on their cups altogether. Someone always has something to say about their messages, no matter what they say on them. This took place right in the Metroplex at a Starbucks inside a Target in Irving, where a customer took offense to a joke that the barista wrote on their cup. Now, the joke was this. What do you call a sick eagle? Illegal.
Illegal.
Sick. Everyone laughs at it. This lady did not laugh. Happened to be Hispanic, and this blew up for obvious reasons. Bad timing for this. The employee at Starbucks, the barista, should have known because Blanca Lopez is taking charge of this and taking offense to everything. She was ordering coffee with her two daughters, and one of the daughters pointed out about the message, and Blanca rose hell. She was shocked that someone actually wrote this on a cup. Blanca said, and this CBS 11 has a big story of this as well. They have all the news on this. But Blanca said, it's basically saying that we are sick, illegal individuals that do not belong in this country. She told the Starbucks manager, who said there would be a team meeting so this doesn't happen again. So the employee, as of now, was not fired for this. But yeah, bad timing for this joke.
Yeah, I'll start. Are the Starbucks employees, is this like Mike Knight? Like, do they get... Do you write down 5 jokes for approval in the morning? Are they like 10 daily Starbucks jokes that all the franchises get? Or do you just have carte blanche and the freedom to work on your material on these cups?
I've never gotten a joke on a cup. I always just get my name on it.
I haven't gotten necessarily jokes that I remember. I've gotten like messages.
Have a great day.
Inspirational. Spell my name A-R-J-A-Y sometimes. You know, like they're just
phonetic.
Spell,
yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, if this is that person, that barista's gimmick, that's this barista's gimmick.
This is a really bad time.
It is
really bad.
So here's the thing. I think all these things can be true. It's a funny joke. It's a harmless joke.
It's a dad joke.
It probably needed some optics or some awareness of some optics. And again, you got to remember who you're working for. Starbucks, which Starbucks is generally the one that like makes everybody go through all of these various sensitivity training things and do all these different things like that. So you know they're going to take it as anybody who's got this. But yeah, it doesn't help. You say a sick eagle. That right there, that sounds like what's the imagery for sick America? And then he goes, ill. Like, I mean, there's a lot there that could be taken the wrong way.
You read into that something fierce.
I don't think that's reading into it that much more.
I mean, I don't know that. You know, like, I guess if she or he, whoever the priest is, knew this was a Hispanic person, which I guess if you write the name on the cup,
it's in the Blanca. Target. It's not like you're going through the drive-thru. It's the Target Starbucks. So he's sitting there taking her order.
Yeah, that was the only thing I was trying to find is, was it maybe an online order? But yeah, Target Starbucks probably doesn't do online orders because then you just see probably Blanca L. You know, you don't put two and two together, but that's the only excuse I get. But yeah, it's just not.
Look, if you're going to get upset about it, you have to be convinced that the barista was targeting you for the joke,
which I don't believe. Yeah. I wouldn't guess. I mean, I obviously guess I can't know, but I wouldn't think
you can't know.
But unfortunate. Very unfortunate. That's the word I'll use for it.
Chris Strong would never. He would never do that. He would have just handled their order the right way. Him and his Oregon roots.
Oh. Is he? Was he a Starbucks barista?
Yeah, yeah. That's why he was all about like, yeah, hell yeah, Luigi.
He did follow Luigi on Twitter. So yeah, maybe Starbucks just needs to stop writing messages.
But that's really what I do want to know. If you've worked at a Starbucks,
I don't know.
Might have a connection there.
I would have. I did at one point.
Who gives you the material? They can't let you just write your own jokes. It has to be like out of a handbook or a guide. Right? Like, here's the Tuesday jokes.
Or do you think they tell you, hey, come up with 5 or 6 jokes and just rewrite them? You know, maybe that's part of the app. I don't know. I mean,
that's giving a lot of creative freedom to someone that's putting the whipped cream in your drink.
Aren't they all like aspiring actors and stuff like that?
They're
the people
all,
at Starbucks.
In Irving?
Yeah, that kind of sucks. It's the Starbucks in the Target. You don't even get to be the maid show.
So yeah, maybe Starbucks just needs to stop writing messages. Stick to smiley faces or misspelling someone's first and last name. But it is PP in the morning every Tuesday at this time. Gift opening. Do you hate when people watch you opening gifts, whether it be Christmas, birthday, Father's Day, anything? Do you hate people watching you open the gifts?
Yeah. Yep.
All you.
Ruins it for my wife and my family because I'm always like, oh, nice. Yay. This is good. I don't even want the gift. Want the gift because of the gift opening.
Same. Here's the thing. There's so much pressure on you to react in an authentic, believable, happy way.
Yeah.
That I could genuinely like whatever you gave me, but I could be so in my head about selling it that it comes off as fake, and then they think I didn't like it. And
now, I will say,
problems.
If Amanda or someone gives me something like I really did need or want, they get the reaction they want. I'm like, oh, like they can tell the genuine surprise. But 9 times out of 10, I'm like, thank you.
Kristen shifted for a while with the girls. She wouldn't let the girls open presents at the parties.
Oh yeah.
She would take them home. She would film reactions and then she would tag them on Facebook with here they are, open it. That way if we got a bad reaction, she cleaned it.
Ollie's not allowed Saturday to open his gifts during everyone has to leave.
Good call.
Okay.
No more during the party.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys do when you do Christmas, do you go around the room or do you open all at once?
Try to go around the room.
I still do around the room.
Yeah, we do around the room.
Tough with the kids.
Yeah. I'm just so excited to get something new.
Well, Sean,
I'm so excited for my gift card that I'm going to get.
Sean, maybe you can try this, a new trend going around Saturday with Ollie's birthday. It's a trend that more people have started doing. It started with baby showers, but has moved to a gift opening just in general. It's where you start displaying the open gifts for people to look at instead of everyone watching you. You already opened it beforehand. You have them displayed so when they walk in, they can react the way they do. And so that way no one watches you awkwardly either struggle with the box or react in a way like, okay, that's my gift. How are they going to react? Because, you know, sometimes, you know, your instant reaction, because everyone's watching the eyes. You know, what do you do with the facial expression, the eyes? And so it just avoids all the awkwardness and stuff there. But maybe that's something you can try.
But how am I opening the gifts beforehand? Like, I have to do it during the party?
Yeah, I guess you go in a separate room. You open them, and then you bring them out while everyone's, I don't know, outside doing whatever.
I think that seems weird.
Go into your private room and open these and bring them back out to us.
And it still makes people feel bad if, like, or great, if your kid, if Ollie plays, like, one gift that he's fixated on, it's like, oh, there's the winner. Mm-hmm. Everyone else, you bunch of loser gifts.
Yeah, I remember there was one time my brother, when he was younger, he opens up my dad and got him at a party. Like, a bunch of people got him stuff, and it was this thing for my dad, and he opened it, and he goes, good try, Dad. And then he put it off the side. I was like, say, nobody wants that.
Yeah, I never felt the awkwardness or weird when opening gifts. It always was a struggle. Like, if I struggled opening up a gift because, like, you know, the box was super glued together or something like that, like, then I was like, oh, no, the pressure's on me. But I never felt, sometimes you struggle with the box. You're like, why is this thing not opening? But, I've learned early on Mackenzie hated opening up gifts.
He asked this question. We're all assuming, like, yeah, the social awkwardness. He's like, aren't these boxes tough?
This is a test of my manhood right here. Dad's gonna grab me.
You know, they're watching. They're like, all right, open up the box. And you're like struggling to. That's why that's the one thing I don't like about people watching.
I don't know if y'all have experienced this yet. My kids, when they open a package, it doesn't matter what it is. Could be a bag of chips. It is the worst. Like, I try to open a bag of chips where it's open and it's like all. They just tear down the middle. Half the chips fly out. They open a box of cereal. They just rip one side.
You should love that.
It's just
choppy manliness.
Yeah. It is. It's like, guys, He's got to reseal. We need to reseal here.
No, I used to do when I was a kid with the chips is I would just pop them. That's how I opened it. Instead of going through, I would just squeeze it and pop the top. Because, I mean, now sometimes you get like it flies in the air, but it was fun doing that as a kid. But last story here, guys. Look, having a Coke on a beach might seem refreshing to some, but we're not talking about the soda here. This is cocaine. It's made its way to the shores of Alabama. Where an amount that equals $1.5 million was found. It was all packaged up, but people had opened the packaging and saw what was inside and then called the police. But I got to ask you all the real question. If you found this, knew the value of it, let's just say it wasn't cocaine. It was some, you know, illegal substance. You can make up whatever you want. Are you trying to think about selling it, or do you just say, you know what, I want this out of my hands? 1.5 million, a lot of people could use it. Because I do think in my mind, I'm thinking immediately the value of something. You know, I might not actually do it because I'll think long term, but I'm like, the value of this could be.
What are you going to do? What are you hardcore Peyton on the streets going to do?
You know, I don't know. You know,
you go up and down the boardwalk?
Yeah, maybe.
Peddling it, divvying it in the bags.
Baltimore.
What are you going to do, Pepe?
I've seen enough movies, enough episodes of The Wire to know. You get a package like that, you're not going to go out there sell it on your own on the corners. You're not doing that.
You got to find a buyer,
and they're going to give you, if you're lucky, 60 cents on the dollar. They may just beat your ass and take it for you. And you're holding $1.5 million worth of cocaine. Somebody's looking for that. Do I want to be the one holding it when they come find you have it? I don't think so. No, I wouldn't even touch it.
Yeah, I'd be terrified. Terrified, call the police. Tell the lifeguard.
Oh, man. I don't want to call the police. I'm not calling the police.
Well, are you scared that they won't just believe that it is not yours?
Yeah. And I also don't know if like someone's like watching you go to the police. They want their coke back.
Okay, so what are you gonna do?
Yeah, I honestly don't know, because it's a lot easier to move, I think, like a little small bag of cocaine than a whole $1.5 million brick. That's tough to move. You can't move that kind of material without connections.
972 Bobby says, I'm going to smell it and then call the cops. There you go. 972. Yeah,
I'm going to brush my teeth with it.
Choppy's really going to be regretting he bites his nails all the time in that moment.
How is that going with your nail biting and that thing she put on them?
I picked it off. I picked it off. So I'm back to biting again.
So she hasn't reapplied.
No, she keeps trying to, and I keep pushing back. So I settled on the cuticle oil. I'll give her the cuticle. I'll let her do that. That way I get my pretty nails again. But I need to get a pedicure, I think.
Okay. And that's why your kids want to rip the bags open to maintain the manliness in the family. PP in the morning with Peyton Phillip Russell. We'll have more Peyton Thursday at 6:40 in the payload here on DFW Sports Station. Thanks for turning it on, leaving it on, watching on the fan cam. We want to hook it with another ticket giveaway, NBA Youngboy, in the 9 o'clock hour on your official home of the Dallas Cowboys. One NFL insider says the Cowboys caught the attention of the entire NFL recently. Find out why next in B-Low.
B-Belt.
Right here on the fan. The great Bobby Belt.
Bobby Belt is an idiot.
Don't make me take off my belt.
Don't make me take off my belt.
We're not.
Over to you, Bobby.
NFC East teams are terrified of the Dallas Cowboys, according to one sensationalist headline that was relaying a quote that was not nearly that aggressive from an NFL insider. We'll talk about that here in Below the Belt, which is sponsored by D&M Leasing. You can check them out at dmautoleasing.com. I had seen this yesterday while I was looking around, and Yahoo had this headline up: NFC East teams terrified about how good Dallas Cowboys will be with George Pickens. I was like, really? Who's saying this? Because it said NFL rumors. I'm like, all right, this must be assigned to somebody.
Reminds me of these Mavs tweets yesterday of someone saying the Rockets are getting Clint Capella and Sam, what is the name of the Australian, the big man? Bowie. Steven Adams. And Clint Capella, because they're scared of the Mavericks and their towers of powers. That was what was going around yesterday. People are really threatened by the Mavs front line.
It's exactly what it is with the Cowboys. They're scared of them. So I opened it up and I went, all right, what is this actually? So then I look and I find the source transcript of the quote. This is something that was said over the weekend on SportsCenter. I'd looked for it. I couldn't find it. But Bleacher Report had transcribed this from Jeremy Fowler over at the Worldwide Leader. And he had been on SportsCenter on Sunday. He said the George Pickens trade has the league's full attention, particularly in the NFC East. people I've talked to in that division feel like he can tilt the field for Dallas and he'll be a major player because he's one of the best contested catchers in the league. Body contorted things downfield, so he gives them a new dimension. The issue really in Pittsburgh was the maturity issues and some of those problems there, but a lot of it stems with Pickens wanting to get the ball and wanting the offense to move properly, having the passing game humming, and so Dallas has that with Dak Prescott and CeeDee Lamb already, so he's walking in to a good situation. So this particularly, and he continues on about Pickens, he said Cowboys feel he'll be highly motivated, be on his best behavior in a contract year. This could really pay off. This is a thing where Dallas has made a trade where people stopped and said, okay, this is a factor. So it's really resonated league-wide. This feels like, when did this trade happen? 6 weeks ago? 2 months ago? Something like that? Somewhere roughly around there. This already feels like revisionist history. Wasn't all the fallout the day after people talking about Pittsburgh won and what is Dallas doing?
No, I don't remember it like that.
Not that late of a pick.
My question is, bigger change of heart here over Schottenheimer or Pickens?
Oh, the Schottenheimer one, because there was a lot of Cowboy fans were visibly like distraught when they were like, get Brian Schottenheimer. And now it's, I think it's everybody's like, all right, you know, I can get by with this. This guy, I can get down with this.
Yeah,
Pickens is like, Pickens is always going to be about, hey, can you make catches or not?
Schottenheimer's, Pickens is cognitive dissonance, where people mean? Just, basically, they're trying to rationalize things. It's the same issue as like when T.O. got here. I hate T.O. and then T.O. got here. It's like, T.O.'s the greatest.
Yeah.
I forgive everything now. I don't care that he spat on the star. And
would we do that if LeBron was here?
No, not now. Earlier in his career, yes. Not now.
T.O. was he stood on the star.
A-Rod.
Yeah, A-Rod. A-Rod didn't do anything beforehand. A-Rod, you know what I mean? Don't discount the political aspect of LeBron, too, that with the fan base here.
China.
yeah, I mean, it's like, don't just, that plays into it. I think you'd be foolish if you think it didn't. So, yeah, there's just more to LeBron than T.O.
And Pickens, I think, again, it's one of those things where everyone's just like,
think about the statement you just made. There's more to LeBron than T.O.
Yeah, when
really, there shouldn't be. I mean, LeBron, China.
You should be able to have political views and not have it
yearly cancer.
Yeah, you should be able to have political views and not have it impact your. That's not the way it is anymore, right? Yeah. People, people don't invite friends over that aren't politically aligned. It's the dumbest thing ever, but that's just the way it is. LeBron. Yeah. Brings that into it, and then the China stuff, and you know, but T.O. was like, he was a team cancer, but you looked past that because he was the best receiver in the NFL at the time, or
second
best with Randy Moss or whatever. It was right. He was right there.
Yeah, this is. I mean, it's very much like they did change their tune pretty quick here in Dallas, because obviously it went from you can't bring him into this culture to. This is what your culture was built for, was to bring guys like this in and be able to weather it. I think always people thought he
sounds just like Bobby Belt.
People thought he was a good player. I was just explaining what their perspective is. I'm not saying whether they're right or not. I literally was just saying what Dallas's thought process is and why they're doing it. The people always thought he could play. But yeah, I'm sure if we go dig up some tweets after Jordan Lewis said Pittsburgh needs to get a new receiver, Pickens isn't it or whatever he said. Sure, there were a lot of people who were going like, yeah, Pickens sucks. And I'm like, how are you guarding everybody?
24 hours before this rumor broke out, we were all saying, he's the biggest knucklehead in the NFL. And he still may be.
Yeah. But like we view him as, I think universally everybody viewed him as, this is a good player who, if it's just about football, you absolutely make this move. You make this move if it's just about what is he able to do on the field and there's no other concerns. The problem was that everybody agreed, this dude is a complete toxic aspect that will destroy what your culture is.
Let me ask this. Which one do you feel like you will be more wrong about? Pickens or Schottenheimer?
Pickens is the only one that I might be like, I mean, in terms of if wrong on Schottenheimer, I said I liked Schottenheimer as a hire. I didn't mind the Schottenheimer hire when it was made. I felt like he's an improvement for McCarthy. That's how I felt. Yeah. And so to me, I didn't.
Okay.
I thought that there was too much panic over the Schottenheimer hire.
What do you
Pickens,
think?
Pickens would be a shift.
I mean, I think he's a really good player. I don't have any fear. I think he's going to really open up things for CD. and vice versa. I've turned around the Shoddy. I have no problem with the Shoddy. Like I think he's a downgrade from Mike. I think it's hard to say that he isn't from a.
It's hard. It's impossible to say from a resume. I don't think you can definitively say he is a downgrade as a coach because you don't know.
Right. We don't know. We don't. I mean, he could be. He could be in just this.
His resume savant. Is absolutely a downgrade. Yes.
Yeah.
But all right. So another story. Another thing that everybody has a chance to be wrong about. Saquon Barkley. And I'm curious if this has anybody worked up when you hear this. So weigh in on the fan text 877-881-1053. Because I thought this was kind of ridiculous the way this was getting talked about yesterday. Pro Football Talk threw the story up, and they weren't panicking over it. But Saquon Barkley was at a charity softball event for Devontae Smith in Allentown. Chop, great song by Billy Joel. We're just talking about that during the break. He was at this charity softball event, and some streamer who, I don't know who they are, Janky Rondo, you know who that is, Peyton? Never heard of that person.
Ray John's cousin.
Yeah, that's who it is. So he was asking him, man, did you never think about going to the Commanders? Or why'd you end up in Philly? Like, just asking if there's an influencer. And this is what Saquon Barkley said. Never heard a word from the Commanders or Dallas. And he said, that's why it's BTA when I see him. BTA, of course, standing for beat that ass.
No way.
Yep.
Is it?
And so that's what he's all about. So this was being talked about yesterday on social media and a few articles out there that I saw about, wow, look at the Cowboys dropping the ball once again. Not only Derrick Henry, they didn't even reach out to Saquon Barkley. Why would you? Why would, like, if we would have heard they were reaching out to Saquon Barkley about 12, 13 million when he was a free agent, we would have all been like, you guys are idiots.
Yep.
The Derrick Henry one, he talked about he wanted to be here. Mm. He lived here. You thought maybe there's a chance for a deal there. You didn't even call to find out.
But that's, older.
Right, older. But you felt like you might be able to swing a deal on that one. You just don't ever know because you didn't call. That one I understand people getting frustrated about. But literally, the only way that Saquon Barkley at that value, at that position, would have been worth it would have been if he rushed for 2,000 yards, carried the ball 50 times more than he did, and scored 15 touchdowns, which is what he did.
Yeah.
And nobody would have bet on that. If you would have bet on that, you would have been an absolute fool.
Yep.
But I was stunned to find yesterday people thought this was negligence from the Cowboys.
Because they forget, because people don't want to admit that they're wrong. Which is why I have to remind you guys all the times that you're wrong on this show. And we have to hold our... Hagelin's the only one that got it. He laughed in the other room. The rest of you sitting here looking at something.
Well, I was they were all lighting me up on the fan text. They're saying, belt ass, not beat that ass. So that's what that was.
BTA. Oh, okay. Maybe we'll rename the segment.
Belt ass.
Yeah. But no, we were wrong about Derrick Henry. We were wrong about Saquon Barkley. Now, Saquon has proved it for a year. Let's see if he stays... But the year won them a title, so it's a successful signing. But let's see what happens with Saquon this year and the year after, especially being on that Madden cover.
Yeah, oh yeah, because now he's jinxed.
Now he's jinxed.
Well, and I mean, look, everything he did last year was above what he had ever done for his career, whether it could be health, touches, everything was viewed as unsustainable. I would bet, if I was betting, I bet he's probably going to get hurt at some point this year. Not that I'm wishing it.
Careful,
I'm not G-bag here. I don't wish injuries, and I don't revise them like KNC.
Kevin heard that.
I just try to project.
I don't even know what that reference is.
I don't either. But I like it.
Dak. I guess it's technically not anybody on KNC anymore. But
yeah, Rangers broadcast. Take that stuff to Victory Plus now.
If you like to me. The likeliest outcome is
Patrick Walker waiting for you in the parking lot.
The likeliest outcome is he misses games this year. And definitely the likeliest outcome is he never plays even 80% of that level that he did last year. Because it's just that's usually a player's peak. Nobody generally sustains that, especially somebody like him who had been completely fragile the entire time.
Look, I mean, that's to say that he's never going to have that kind of an impact in a year again. Yeah, that's not crazy. You know, he was terrific. There's no way to sugarcoat it. Does he have the same year last year that he has if he was on the Cowboys last year? No.
Right.
The O-line isn't as good.
And that's, so the fan text just pointed that out.
This was Jerry's Derrick Henry justification, which is ludicrous. Luda! Because you don't have to have the same exact year in order to justify a signing. You could still have a really good year and have a good signing.
Yeah, and we've talked about it. Jerry was, it's like we were burned out, man. It was the DeMarcus Lawrence excuse. It's somebody looking for an excuse because they don't want to give the real one, which is Jerry was told we can't afford it. And Jerry would have wanted to do it. but they were.
It was we can't afford it, or he's going to break down.
No, with Derrick Henry, it was we can't make it work on the cap. And so Jerry was like, okay, we can't make it work on the cap. All right, I got it. And so that's what I think that frustrated him throughout the year, was that I wanted to make that signing. I wanted to check into it. And I was told we didn't have the financial capacity to make it work. But Barkley, we would have spent an entire offseason.
I don't even think we had we searched for Cowboy content and topics, not the desperation of the four letter every damn day. We search for content and topics.
Yeah,
we never had a Saquon Cowboy discussion.
Never.
That I remember.
No, it doesn't feel like regret at all, because it was so improbable. It was so expensive. And it was viewed universally at the time of like, what is a smart organization like Philadelphia doing spending that kind of money on that position? That's just irrational. They're completely destroying this.
B-low.
B-belt.
Belt to ass. Right here on your home of the Dallas Cowboys and Texas Rangers, 105.3 The Fan. We have another NBA Young Boy giveaway. Still waiting for some free agent fireworks this morning. D'Angelo Russell is your Kyrie replacement for right now. But forget about the coaches. Forget about the bats. Forget about the injuries. Is the stadium the Texas Rangers' real problem? Diamond Cavs on the home of the Rangers with a new ticket giveaway next.